Yeah, my fingers got stuck to the button there after all of the strawberry shortcake. Happy hour! The Glass in the afternoon radio program. News Sports Talk 98.7, AM 1370, and WGCLradio.com. Thank you for being with us no matter where you're listening. The 23rd day of July. The 2020 year nobody will ever forget, the one with the asterisk right next to it. What are we doing? It's Thursday. It's happy hour. That's the good news. I am overwhelmed by my senses. I have Pacers scrimmage on the computer. I have the PGA Tour event, the 3M Open at the TPC Twin Cities on the television. I have all the social media humming around me, news and headlines and everything else, which we will get to throughout the final hour. And if that's not enough, our great friend Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star is joining us via Skype, I believe is the method of communication devices today. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How about you?
Liverpool fan Andy Graham was on the phone with us in hour number one as we talked to his delightful wife, Susie, who is the director of development at Ivy Tech. So we're getting filled in with everything at Ivy Tech, and I was lambasting Keith about we don't have any strawberry shortcake. The strawberry shortcake festival is going on at the Switchyard Pavilion today to support the Boys and Girls Club. So I suggested to Susie, well, you know, Andy's retired; he has nothing better to do. Why doesn't he go and get us some strawberry shortcake? And then we had a nice conversation with Susie, which we always do, and got great information about Ivy Tech. And then Andy comes back on to tell me about Liverpool's greatness. So I explained to Susie, it was like IU and Purdue, and he's Purdue. So she asked me if I was a big soccer fan, or she knew I was. So anyhow, Andy and I talk, and then we wrap it up with Susie, and we left it at that. And the next thing you know, an hour later, He's delivering a strawberry shortcake. So he has surpassed you for the greatest Liverpool fan ever. You have a chance to redeem yourself, but right now it is a Stee 1, Stee 2, and then Andy Graham. That's how it lines up.
To be fair, I don't think I was ever in the running for best Liverpool fan ever.
I know.
Top 100,000.
That I know. That's the key. So you have a chance to redeem your – well, I guess coming on this program every week with me counts as redemption. So maybe you are 1A along with Andy. So the strawberry shortcake, delightful. Andy got a couple shots in about Liverpool Football Club. So it's been a pretty good afternoon for you, and you just got here.
Exactly. No, it's been an enjoyable 24 hours. I have been guzzling the content, as it were, the video, the audio, the written word. We're pretty much – whatever it takes. If you drew stick figures on a, you know, in graffiti on a wall downtown, I'd probably go take a picture in front of it.
Well, good. Because you never know if it'd be another 30 years before you win another one. And everybody laughed at that last time that was said in, what, 1990. So you can't take them for granted. You have to enjoy them. And hopefully the celebrations were safe enough in the fair city of Liverpool last night. I know the magistrates and everybody else weren't real happy with everybody coming out, but that's hard to do, and that's going to be a really interesting thing here because we have sports getting ready to start. I'm watching the Pacers and Trailblazers right now, 6:15 to go fourth quarter, Pacers by 13. We're getting the NBA back and running. Tonight, the Major League Baseball season starts, and it's the first of the four team sports, major team sports in our country, no offense to the MLS, that are getting up and running. At some point, the reason these teams are playing is to do what? Well, it's to crown a champion and have playoffs. What are we going to do as Americans? What usually goes on when your team wins a championship? Well, your city throws in a huge party. There's 2 million people in Grant Park. There's 1 million people in Kansas City. There's it's going to be interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's
the people of Liverpool were begged not to go.
The hypothetical here for a long time in this country, and we've watched other countries kind of move from the hypothetical to the literal And obviously most of them with a fair amount of success at keeping these bubbles tight and keeping players healthy, or at least, you know, sort of COVID free and keeping everything sort of humming along. Now it's our turn to see if we can do that. And I think that, you know, I think American sports leagues American professional leagues probably looked overseas to see what was working and what wasn't for other leagues around the world. I think that now what you're probably going to see is them looking to one another, and even to some extent, possibly high school and college looking to the pros to see what works, what doesn't, what fits, what doesn't.
Well, it shouldn't be the other way around.
That's absolutely true.
Those who have the most money, the most resources and everything else, that's one thing, but they should start all this, shouldn't they?
They should. I mean, again, they're the ones, you say, with the best resources. There, as we've talked about many times, they're the ones with maybe the best ability to build that bubble, you know, to keep kind of all of the major players and decision makers in a more self-contained space, both literally and figuratively, to be able to achieve a lot of this. But, you know, we'll see, because I think the unfortunate reality in America that, you know, that has not been the case in a lot of other places that have resumed some sort of sporting activity is that we still don't – there are portions of this country that are still dealing with pretty significant outbreaks of this, and we're still kind of struggling to get a national strategy that really – turns this down in a substantial way. So, you know, will that have an effect? I mean, you're already seeing, I think there was a report today that Juan Soto from the Nationals tested positive. Of course, the Nationals are supposed to play the Yankees tonight in one of the two opening day games, if you want to call it that, of this abbreviated baseball season. You know, I haven't followed it closely enough to know exactly what's going on. Whether that's going to be postponed or not, but, you know, here we go. It just sort of feels like we're going to go ahead and have to jump some of these hurdles right out of the gate.
Let me get everyone updated on that. Soto is tested positive. Will miss the season opener tonight. Asymptomatic. Nobody else on the roster was deemed ineligible following contact tracing. Soto needs two negative tests before he can return. The Nationals did not include Soto on their initial 30-man roster, placing him on the COVID-19 injured list, which is a thing now, obviously. And there you go. So it doesn't sound like any problems of it, that domino did not cause any other dominoes to fall over. Nats manager Davey Martinez, according to ESPN, said Soto will be replaced in left field by Andrew Stevenson. Martinez said anyone who was in close contact with Soto was tested early Thursday morning, will be tested again Friday. He was hoping the test would be available by Friday night. So I don't know if that means players in the organization or anyone. Anyone means anyone. So that must mean anyone. And when better safe than sorry on that. Yankees, Washington tonight, 7 o'clock, followed by San Francisco and the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Washington Nationals are your defending champions of baseball. 60 games in 66 days. And we know that people are going to get it, Zach, and that's not the deal. It's how it's going to be managed. And we saw that, I believe, last week with Indiana football. I think that was a Friday afternoon press release that came out. I think that's how the timing went. All these days run together. But the simple fact was, when every player for IU football returned to campus, they had to be tested and quarantined, and they still got it. So there is no perfect system unless you have a bubble like the NBA does so far. It's going to be a question, like you mentioned, now what happens after somebody gets it? Is that the next scary step, or is that just something, if you're going to have sports, you're going to have this problem?
Well, this is where I think you get into some of the fundamental differences between the pros and college. You can't build a bubble around college athletes. They have to go to class. If you excuse them from going to class, as we've talked about before, you would effectively be setting up your own argument for, you know, basically the death of amateurism. It would take a a good lawyer an hour, you know, to draw up some sort of legal challenge by saying that you are holding athletes directly to a different standard during a public health crisis than you would normal students. Now, you know, that conversation maybe gets a little bit less intense, is maybe the word, a little bit less confrontational if, for example, schools try to reopen and can't. You know, if that makes sense, if I'm just using Indiana as a hypothetical or as an example, if Indiana brings everyone back, all the students back, and within 3 or 4 weeks, the positivity rates are just too high, local healthcare systems worried about being overwhelmed, and the university says, we're just going to have to shut this down. We tried to make it work and couldn't. You know, could you then go on to ask athletes to continue competing in a more, in a completely remote learning environment? Yeah, maybe. And then maybe you do have more of a chance of building that bubble without so directly contravening, you know, sort of the principles behind amateurism. That's a legal argument I'm not quite qualified enough to make, I don't think. But one way or another, it's not going to be quite so clean and clear cut for college. And then, of course, as we get into high school and that sort of thing, that, you know, that becomes a lot more parochial very, very quickly.
And as we move forward in this, Indiana University really hasn't released many details. I mean, if you read on the internet, you can see what some of the sources say on who's missing it. But when you compare and contrast around the conference and everywhere else, where should I be looking? Should I be worried about what Michigan and Michigan State are doing since we're going to play only conference games? Or should I pay attention to the number at West Virginia or Oklahoma or Clemson or Alabama if I'm a fan trying to get this back on track? Who should I? Should I just be watching the enemy of my enemy, which is my friend?
Well, I think you know, from a practical standpoint, with the Big Ten limiting everything to you know, conference play only through the fall, and I think there being a fairly strong suspicion that's going to continue into the winter at this point, though I don't think that decision's been made. You know, I think one of the big advantages of those decisions is that those institutions and those conferences only have to worry about a very small number of physical places. So, in other words, the Big Ten doesn't have to worry about any of the teams in Ohio State's non-conference football schedule, or, you know, if Penn State volleyball will be playing in any, you know, non-conference tournaments against teams from the South, Midwest, Northeast, and West, you know, West Coast, they'll only have to worry about basically monitoring the situations ongoing in the 14 cities, the 14 states, at least to some degree, and then, of course, the immediate sort of municipalities and campuses. You know, that's going to be, it's still going to be tricky, but it's going to be a lot less difficult. Now, of course, again, you still can't hermetically seal these communities. People are going to leave. They're going to go visit friends somewhere or have to travel for work or who knows what. But I think it's worth pointing out too, that a lot of these universities are pretty, including IU, are pretty strictly limiting, you know, basically any sort of work travel. I think Indiana has all but banned, Indiana University I'm talking about, I think has all but banned any travel, any work travel for its employees at all outside the state of Indiana. And I think even inside the state, there's a fairly layered process to figure out whether or not that sort of thing is essential. Yeah, you obviously can't control your students. And so again, you can't, as I said, you can't hermetically seal the whole campus area, but at least you're only worrying about, you know, 14 campuses, not 110 campuses or whatever the number would be.
Well, that's what I find interesting, because I saw reports today that the NCAA Board of Governors, they're getting together tomorrow. What can they do? What are they? I don't understand. Here's what CBS Sports is reporting. On Friday, the NCAA Board of Governors is scheduled to consider voting on whether to cancel fall championships Well, that sounds pretty heavy lifting. One source told CBS Sports that is the only agenda item for the NCAA's highest governing body. In essence, Friday could become the go, no-go moment for the college football season, but they don't control the college football championship, right?
Right, yeah, no. The NCAA does not control the bowl structure, and it does not control the conference championships. And
they don't control college football is probably the easiest way to say that.
Right, yes, exactly. I think basically what you would be doing in that situation if you canceled the NCAA championships is you would be saying to the individual conferences, again, let's use IU men's soccer
yes,
as an
please.
Example, a program that consistently plays in the NCAA championship structure in its sport. What you would be saying is the most IU soccer can win this year's Big Ten championship. And if the Big Ten wants to hold a men's soccer tournament at the end of the season, then it can win that too, but there will be nothing beyond that. But college football, obviously, of course, the NCAA governs college football from a rules perspective, from a recruiting perspective, things like that. But when it comes to college football's postseason, that is structured by the conferences. And then, of course, the sort of college football playoff apparatus, and then the individual players involved in that, like the TV networks, the bowl sponsors, people like that. The NCAA is not involved in that. So if the NCAA was to cancel fall championships, that at least in theory, now I have not heard any talk at all of this. I suppose the conference commissioners could say, well, in the spirit of that decision, we are going to move to suspend whatever until the spring or, you know, until further notice. But I doubt that would happen. College football acts sort of on its own in this regard, and I think would probably continue to.
Is that a good thing, though, that they are not tied into this? Because that, I mean, that could bring the hope.
Sure. I mean,
or is it because everything else is canceled, they just need to follow along and not put the team with the biggest risk out there?
This has always been sort of one of the tricky parts of talking about governance and talking about having these conversations, especially right now when you're trying to figure out who's in charge and who's making the decisions. The NCAA, in some areas, to its credit, has tried to step up and lead. I know that, for example, the NCAA was kind of the point organization on the wider sort of mandatory blanket testing protocols that were announced recently that are supported by the conferences. But up to that point, it had been up to either the individual conferences or in a lot of cases, just the individual schools to say, well, this is what we want to do. You know, we're going to test this often and we're going to test when this happens, but not when this happens. And we're only going to, you know, we're going to do, we'll test for the virus, but we're not going to test for the antibodies and so on and so forth. I think maybe Kentucky was only testing for the antibodies at one point. I may be wrong about that, the University of Kentucky, but I think I'm right. One way or another, you know, the NCAA has stepped up to lead in some areas. It's also really very much sort of stood to the side to let the conferences make their own decisions and others, like, for example, canceling all non-conference competition in the fall. The NCAA released a statement basically saying we're not going to put our hands in this particular pie. You know, we want no part of it. But you do kind of, when you talk about football versus all the other sports, and that includes men's basketball now, because obviously, while the NCAA doesn't really have a strong hand in the football postseason, the bowl structure and the playoff structure, it runs the men's and women's basketball postseasons. You know, those are the NCAA tournaments as we know them, sort of not just by their title, but also I think probably by the nomenclature around how we, you know, if I say the NCAA tournament, I could be talking about one of any number of tournaments, but without context, you would be assuming in all likelihood that I was talking about the Field of 68 and March Madness.
That's right. 100%. So, not 98%, 100%. If you said that to any sports fan, they wouldn't blink.
This is one of those sort of weird gray areas where it's kind of like who's in charge. And if the NCAA decides to shut down its fall championships, but college football tries to go ahead, yeah, then you get into a bit of a weird ethical ground, a weird moral ground. you know, things you wade into muddy water at that point, and I think people would find their way through it, because the reality is we've been finding our way through it for years now. But it wouldn't be easy. It would come with some technical difficulties, so to speak.
And nobody said it would be easy. Have you seen any of these NBA scrimmage games yet? I'm watching the Pacers and Trailblazers right now. Have you just not watched the game for a basketball content, but have you seen what these courts look like? Have you looked at it yet?
I have not.
I'm going to describe it to you, because I'm guessing you're not the only one. And I want you and the listener to hear this context, because if this is what the NBA is doing, how does this assimilate to Simon Scott Assembly Hall? When you're looking at the bench, the first row of the bench has four assistant coaches. Chair, coach, chair, coach, up to four. Understand? Sounds pretty simple, right?
Right.
So you're losing four. You have four coaches for eight seats. So you're losing half your seats right there. Behind that is the first row of players of three, every other seat. So you have, obviously, the five guys that are on the court Then the other five are behind them. And then their row is blank. And then you got the rest of the guys that are hurt in a row above that. So for 17 guys, you have 30-something seats. And that's just the Pacers side of the court right now. I haven't even got to the Portland side or what they're doing at the scorer's table. So we're all going to be flexing and being flexible and doing some crazy things. The scorer's table, Zach, is inside like hockey glass. So when a guy goes to check in, it's like when you go to the store. There's a piece of big old piece of plexiglass right there. But they're literally boxed in. So we're going to have to retool just about anything if any of this is going to happen. And again, we're in day two of the NBA stuff in front of no fans. I guess the good news is you have no fans. You can move all this stuff around.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, I think this is probably part of the reason why I don't want to say it's – I mean, listen, the main reason you're not going to bring fans into games right now is because of community spread and because you know, basically the absolute worst thing that you can do in the middle of all this at this moment in time is pack a bunch of people really close together and then give them a reason to stand up and cheer and yell and sing.
On top of each other, right.
I would also say that, you know, the priority of the athletes, of course, in any setting is going to be at the top of your list as well. And if you limit or even just completely ban spectators, it makes it much, much easier to set up. So using Assembly Hall as an example, you probably leave the bleachers that are pulled out behind both benches rolled up into the wall, and then you rework the benches and you build bigger, wider social distancing benches. Now, how do coaches communicate with players? It's not as easy, because you don't want to be – you don't want to be sitting there shouting at Rob Phinisee while he's on the bench, because you have some sort of...
Well, you don't have to shout. There's nobody there to shout over.
Well, but the flip side is if he's two rows back and three seats away, you're going to have to go back and talk to him, because you don't want to yell over to him such that the opposing bench can hear. But again, this is where you figure out what works. You know, the NBA plays a week of games. Archie Miller calls a couple of assistants he knows. Says, hey, how do you, you know, what challenges are you picking up on? What's different? Here are the things I'm worried about. Kind of how did you find your way around that sort of stuff? We just figure it all out as we go.
That's all we can do is figure it out as we go. Zach Osterman's our guest from the Indianapolis Star. What's next for IU football? They said they are suspending their voluntary workouts indefinitely. I'm not asking you to reveal anything you may or may not know, but what does indefinitely mean? Have we seen that with other programs? Does that usually mean 5 days, 10 days, 2 weeks? Is there a CDC deal?
Yeah, so it's interesting.
Deal?
I was, you know, I mean, that's been one of the kind of the obvious questions about all this. As best I can tell, it was not outlined in the news release that Indiana put out announcing on Friday that it would be suspending, you know, as you said, indefinitely. Voluntary workouts. It also does not appear to be directly spelled out in Indiana's restart plan, in terms of, you know, giving an exact amount of time. Now, I think probably the I mean, there are going to be some sort of key elements. Number one is, how quickly does anybody feel like disc was found? Number two, how quickly could everyone that needed to be traced for contact to these people? How quickly did that process happen? You know, you would think it would be at least, let's say, 10, 11 days, you know, possibly up to 2 weeks. You would also imagine that Indiana will announce when it is resumed. You know, the reality of this is, when I say it doesn't matter exactly how long it is, of course it matters from a health perspective. But I'm not a public health expert. I'm not a doctor, and I do not want to claim to be either of those things, of course. What I can speak to with a level of expertise is the athletic side of it. And what I would say is, even if it's a week, if it's 10 days, if it's 12 days, if it's 2 weeks, if it's more, the reality is that the big concern here is more just that this is something that can derail you at a time that when it's a lot more complex to get derailed than right now. You can get to a position where if you're in the middle of preseason camp and all of a sudden you have to shut down for 10 days, well, you've got a duty of care to your athletes to make sure that they are physically ready for their season so that you don't put them in position to potentially get injured. But you lose that, you know, if you lose 2 weeks of camp, the season can't just be on hold until everybody is ready. Because then, of course, you push into pushing it back so far that it's too tricky to. That, you know, again, this is where we get more into what I was saying earlier, which is we've talked about this in hypothetical ways, but now we're doing it in practice and we're finding obstacles that we could only realistically figure out how to navigate around or over when we were presented with them. We weren't ever going
that's
to be
why
able
they're not
to.
In that's not why that's why it's not in the protocol, I bet, right?
Yeah, you've got to figure out what there's certain things you're only going to learn in this through doing. And this is probably going to wind up being one of them.
Yeah, and once you get to the season, that's a whole different set of circumstances. And the other thing is, if you're only playing conference games, you do have some time to shift, shuffle, and move around. But, again, no one's been here before. Nobody knows how this is going to work or how it's going to happen. But the longer this goes without the voluntary workouts coming back, that should I read into that at all? Or is this, that's just part of the unknown we should go with?
No, I think, you know, 2 weeks would probably be a standard to, I think we've seen other schools shut down for around 2 weeks. If we get more than 2 weeks out, you know, that's, or obviously, of course, if more positive tests are announced, those sorts of things specific to football, I think that's when you maybe get a little bit, you know, concerned as it were. But I don't, you know, it's one where it's just sort of like, well, you know, see where Indiana takes this first, and then we'll figure out from there.
Try to keep it all together, absolutely. So Indiana football, as of right now, in their voluntary off-season workouts, they're trying to make up for lost time. They're trying to get to what is the next date that IU football fans really have to pay attention to. Are they still, quote-unquote, reporting for camp on the first Monday of August like normal, or is that all up in the air as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the moment, they
live in the now, plan man. Is, live
yeah,
in the
I mean,
now.
For the moment, I think everyone is still seeing the season is starting on time, and therefore using those dates as kind of the point to work backward from. You know, ultimately, in at least as we talk about this in a sporting sense, of course, the buck is really going to stop with where the is you know, with where the virus is, obviously. But if we're talking about it from an athletic sense, the schedule is going to be predicated on the games. And, you know, you're not going to enter preseason camp without knowing at least to a rough sort of guarantee when your season's going to start. You're not going to, I mean, put it this way. The Big Ten's not going to open camp on August 1st. And then say, hey, we may push the start of the season back to October, but keep practicing. That's why you're seeing a lot of conference commissioners. I think at this, it seems like a lot of the sort of decision makers in college football. And I think that Kevin Warren and the Big Ten are probably among them in this. In fact, I'm confident they are looking at the beginning of August and saying that's when we've got to have a decision made, because it's sort of like, you know, a go, no go for a moon landing launch. Once you start preseason camp, of course you can stop it. There's no saying you can't. But you can't start it and then just keep it on hold indefinitely while you push the season back 2 weeks and then another week and then 2 more weeks and then 2 more weeks, you know, if that makes sense. So I think that's why you're seeing a lot of people saying when it comes to postponing the season and when we think we're going to be able to start the season and what specifically it's going to look like now that you've dropped non-conference games off people's schedules, et cetera. That's why I think a lot of people are saying right around the turn of the month, because for the moment, if I'm, for example, Tom Allen, I'm looking at that Wisconsin game and I'm saying, okay, I can only control what I can control. Today, I'm still playing Wisconsin September 4th. I start from that date and I work backward. It's when you're told something's changed or something's otherwise. That's when it, you know, it gets to be a little bit. That's when we can start talking about if a schedule is changed, well, then they're not reporting for camp until X date, because again, that new date is the day you work back from.
And that's the one where, again, this final decision by the Board of Governors is going to be nothing for football. And that's where I'm confused. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
because I know you said Kevin Warren the first week and this and that, does it have to be the first week, or are we just trying to get?
I think it has to be whenever you would reasonably tell your players or your programs that they can start camp.
Yeah,
because
does everybody usually start camp on the same time?
You're allowed to. The way it works is you are allowed a certain number of practices over a certain period of time, and that is predicated on when your season starts. So in college basketball, for example, you can start practicing 42 days before your first game.
That's such an NCAA number, isn't it?
Well, because not everyone starts on the same day.
Right.
Indiana's opener against Wisconsin's on a Friday. A couple years ago, Indiana opened against Ohio State on a Thursday. You know, lots of teams play on the first day of the basketball season, but lots of teams don't. And so it's and then what you're allowed is X number of practices within that window. So then you schedule out and say, well, this week we're going to do 3 practices and 2 weightlifting sessions. And next week we may do, you know, 3 days with the strength coach and only 2 practices because we've only got a certain number of practices we can do in this time period. But one way or the other, you kind of get my point.
So,
So it's predicated on when your season starts, and that's why you're seeing everyone saying we think that early August is when we're going to have to make this decision, because obviously you can pause camp, but you can't tell your let's use the Big Ten as the example, because I think a lot of conferences are moving in this direction. If these conferences wind up just saying only conference play all fall, potentially even into the winter, then it then becomes up to the Big Ten, as an example, exclusively to tell its member institutions how football season will look. Those institutions, of course, still are beholden to NCAA rules on recruiting and practice limits and things like that. But because the only games that will be happening are conference games, in terms of talking about the season, that's when it falls completely into the Big Ten's hands. And the Big Ten can't be looking at its member schools and you know the programs, the football programs in its conference, and saying, well, just hold off for another couple weeks, because what you can't do is tell them, all right, the numbers look good, 2 weeks from now we're going to start the season on time. They need the adequate time to build up, or they need the adequate time to know that something has changed, and therefore their schedule is going to change, and therefore they need to come up with a new plan for how to get ready for the season.
While trying to figure out if school is going to start, while trying to figure out, oh man, this is a large, large doing. And we know, does the time with the voluntary workouts suspended indefinitely help the staff, or do they not have enough information right now to process because they just haven't had enough time to see what's going on? Or have they had enough to see that can at least help them get plans moving forward for when it all fires back up again?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would help anyone, because I think this is the period in time in Indiana. I think it actually in football had managed to move to phase two.
Yeah, that's throwing the ball around and putting helmets on and stuff, right?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's quite that far, but it was more advanced activity, I think slightly larger groups and things like that. And, I mean, this is a period in time when you're trying to get these guys back into football shape, because even the ones that went home and were really religious about their workout plans and, you know, getting something that approximated a gym or getting out on a field and doing agility work, whatever – you know, you're still not going to come back in football shape. It's not going to be the same as if those players were allowed basically not unfettered amount of time, but if those players were allowed all the time that they would have been allotted with IU strength and conditioning staff through the spring, into the summer, into June and July, and then to really be getting tuned up for fall camp in the season. So you're doing a lot of catch up right now. Now, I would also say that any football staff, any coaching staff in any sport that is allowed to be practicing right now under school, conference, or NCAA guidelines, any coaching staff under those circumstances that did not build the possibility of a shutdown into its plans
wasn't planning very well.
Yeah, frankly, you're right. Absolutely, was not planning very well. So you also wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Tom Allen and Aaron Wellman and, you know, Indiana strength and conditioning staff weren't necessarily saying, okay, well, we'll just build in 2 weeks where nobody does anything. But they had acknowledged up front, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to pivot as much as we can if things do get paused for a time. But one way or another, you're still in a moment where you were hoping that this time would be so unfettered, so that you could uninterrupted, so that you can, what's the best way to put this? So that you can make up for as much of the lost time as possible.
Go. Yeah. With even if time is lost
from the spring and the summer,
even if time is lost on the backside of it, we're not going to be behind that eight ball again, where we're creating it on the fly. This time we have a plan in place when it does slow down. What's basketball doing? I saw Archie Miller's on Jeff Goodman's daughter's podcast. That's pretty interesting. she gets better guests. Well, no, she's a better guest than I do. That's fine. Also, something in The Athletic. No news is good news from basketball, or are they going to come out and say the basketball's got issues with this? How does this work? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think no news is good news pretty much
anything in life.
Right. Basketball has stepped certain things up here, has been allowed to step certain things up. I believe this week was when coaches are allowed to begin working with players in a limited way. Again, voluntary workouts do not involve what they call accountable coaches, your head coach, your assistant coaches. And that, you know, voluntary workouts are what we tend to think of as, you know, the kind of the off season when you're working with the strength coach and doing player led stuff and open gyms and things like that. So basketball has stepped up its activity level a little bit. I think you're absolutely in a position where no news is just, you know, that's what you want. You want no news. No news is good news.
Let me ask you,
as long as you can just kind of keep plowing along.
Let me ask you a dumb question. Do basketball guys hang with football guys? Do volleyball players hang with – do they – we know it's 24 sports, one team, but is it one team? Or the reason I'm asking this is when you hear about, well, football's shut down, should I be worried if I'm the other sports? Because do they cohort their cohorts?
You know, I think –
or are they in cahoots?
Well, I think probably in a coach's ideal world right now, the answer is no. In general, yes, of course, because –
they speak a common language. They train the same.
Exactly,
they eat the same.
They use the same facilities. They dine in the same places. Now, again, right now, those things are a little bit different. I think there are procedures in place to try and prevent the teams from coming into contact with one another in some of the – you know, some of the athletics facilities that are open, like dining, for example. But, you know, I think informally the answer is surely that some of these athletes are, you know, from across sports are spending time with one another, even sort of now.
There's nobody else here. You kind of.
I think the ideal is no. That just doesn't mean that the answer is yes.
We've heard the NBA guys talk about how the bubble has been kind of a summer campy feel, where all you do is eat, play basketball, and video games all day long. Have you heard of the sense of what it's like for the college kids? They're not in a bubble per se, but they've been told essentially to stay in one. It has to be harder for the they're just kids. They're not adults. They're not paid professionals. It has to be harder for them, wouldn't you figure?
I mean, yes. And I think that even in a more sort of basic sense is why they're remain, you know, nationally fears about the, you know, restarting college in general, because you can tell people to socially distance, you can tell them, you know, to limit their interaction as much as possible and so on and so forth. But, you know, if you're 18, 19 years old, are you really just going to go sit in your dorm room the entire time that you're not in class?
No.
You know, you're not. And you can lecture people on personal responsibility, and I can understand that, but that doesn't mean that you're going to get 100% buy-in. Listen, you know, just to be quite frank, it's not like we're getting 100% buy-in from the general public right now.
Adults. So, right.
You know, why is college going to reflect anything terribly different? But yeah, I mean, that undeniably makes it more complicated.
Let's shift gears, shall we? We got about, 8 minutes left. Baseball, 66 days, 60 games kicks off tonight with the Yankees and the Nationals. The Nationals, as we talked about, defending world champions. They will send out Max Scherzer against the Yankees' new man, Gerrit Cole. That will be followed by former Red Johnny Cueto and the San Francisco Giants. They take the show on the road to Chavez Ravine to find Clayton Kershaw and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Dodgers heavy favorites in the National League. Yankees heavy favorites in the American League. It's just nice to have baseball back, and we've got some Hoosiers, Zach, that we'll pay attention to as we do the two-month sprint here in the league, in the show, as the kids call it.
Yeah, I think there were four. I think Caleb Berger and Alex Dickerson both made the roster with the Giants.
Correct.
Kyle Schwarber with the Cubs.
Josh Fegley with the Cubs as well.
And Josh Fegley with the Cubs as well. And then I think a few more that have wound up on taxi squads. I think Kyle Hart, Jonathan Stever, and Aaron Slagers are all – Hart with the Red Sox, Stever with the White Sox, and Slagers with the Tampa Bay Rays now are all kind of going to be – you know, this is, I think that everyone has sort of understood that some of the roster issues are going to have to be loosed a little bit, or roster rules a little bit, because this is a very much a sprint. The one that I was a little bit, I think came as a bit of a surprise, was Kyle Hart. I think there was an impression that he had put himself into a good position to make the Red Sox roster, which it's also worth pointing out that I think baseball teams are opening. I think they broke camp with 30, and they're going to have to pare that down every couple weeks until I think they get to 26. So I think they have to pare it down 2 weeks from today to 28, and then two more weeks to 26. But the taxi squads are basically, with no minor league baseball formally happening this year, the taxi squads are players that are just going to sort of stay loose, stay fit, keep scrimmaging one another, and be available whenever a team needs to call somebody up.
Simulated games, bullpens,
right.
Things
so
like that for pitchers.
You could still very much see Hart, Stever, Slagers this season for their respective teams.
Well, that's the interesting point as well, because you've heard the NBA guys who are just starting to scrimmage now talk about soft tissue injuries, and I don't think that's going to be any different with Major League Baseball. It's not like Major League Baseball has been in camp for a month.
Right. I mean, it's potentially – I mean, of course, it's a different sport. So you may be dealing with different sets of concerns, but you are still dealing with the same baseline issue, which is – have you given people enough time to properly prepare their bodies? You know,
yeah, what
were guys doing during the shutdown?
Yeah.
And
they're
on
throwing
and
bullpen
on.
Sessions. You can throw all the preseason games you want, but the tenor and tone of a major league game is different. And I guess the only good news is, and I was joking about this earlier in the week, at least it's going to be 90 degrees everywhere, so everybody's going to get loosened up pretty quick.
Yeah, we aren't going to get any of those, like, April games that wind up getting played in sleet and snow, are we?
These guys will stand out in the rain and play because it'll cool them off. That's the fun part. Your Atlanta Braves, young team. Freddie Freeman had a COVID scare. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take for people to we've seen all walks of life. It started with Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, it felt like, and it just seems like there's major players everywhere that get this. Heck, your podcast partner got it, Chronic Hoosier.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Chronic got his test back. I know he's been feeling a little bit better, and of course it's...
Well, he wasn't feeling good to lead into that. I know
right,
that.
Right. I don't think he's over all his symptoms. I think he's just feeling a little bit better. Of course, we wish him well. This is undeniably kind of become one of those sorts of things that it seems like you have to come into person. It seems like there's a segment of the population that needs to come into direct personal contact with this somehow, either themselves or someone very close to them, for them to really kind of embrace how serious it is. And, you know, I'm sure when people do studies and look back at this time in history, we will think about, you know, sort of the public messaging at different points. For example, when we were all told, and this isn't even something that was only just coming from, you know, one side of the aisle politically, there was a time when we all believed that for the vast majority of us, the symptoms of this would just be like the flu. I think that has been debunked by a lot of anecdotal cases. I know that there has been even, you know, up until recently, maybe the last couple of months, there was still kind of conflicting advice about wearing a mask. And it seems like we're only really just now kind of coming to a place where everyone from all corners who is reasonable and responsible about this is saying, you need to wear a mask. We all need to wear masks. The only way that we really drive this thing down is for everybody to be very careful and mask themselves in public. But I don't know what other option you have other than just to keep pushing, keep trying, keep doing everything you can to kind of reach people where they are, essentially, and help them understand why their behavior is just as crucial to defeating this as everyone else's.
Zach Osterman is our guest, checking in as he always does Thursday afternoons. A little breaking news here from the wires. The Major League Baseball Players Association has agreed to a plan to expand the playoffs to 16 teams for the 2020 season. That's what we're going to start tonight. The playoff expansion still needs a final approval from the Major League Baseball owners. All second-place teams in the six divisions would now qualify, and the seventh and eighth teams in each league would be chosen by the best records among the other teams. First round of the playoffs in each league will be a 4-3-game series with all games played at the higher seed's home stadium. The rest of the rounds would be their customary length. Two division series in each will be 5 games, while the ALCS and NLCS and World Series will be 7 games apiece. You got to play more playoff games. Why? You got to put money in the till so you can pay off these contracts.
Well, and I think it also is a bit of a, you know, I think it's a bit of a carrot too for players who would have playoff bonuses and contracts, and, you know, would probably argue that an abbreviated season potentially hinders their chances of reaching the playoffs and things like that. And you're right, it expands your TV offerings. It's worth remembering, you know, the amount of money that I've said this before when we've talked. We say sports is a big business, and of course, in raw numbers, it is. But when you talk about turnover and revenue less expenses and profit, you know, these organizations are not necessarily they're not as big as you think they are, and a lot of them are losing a lot of money here because they're having to pay. They're having to figure out what to do with salaries, to ask people to take cuts or prorate them or whatever. They're losing money on every TV broadcast, every game they can't broadcast on TV, every game they can't open the turnstiles and sell tickets to, et cetera, et cetera. It's, you know, it's everybody just trying to figure out how to make the economics of all this work. I'm not necessarily suggesting that everyone is always operating in completely good faith. But I think everyone is just broadly still just trying to see if they can't push this a little bit along.
I like it too, because how many years have you seen, well, somebody has 100 wins, somebody has 98 wins, and somebody has 94 wins, and a team with 94 wins would have won four other divisions, but they can't get in the playoffs because they're in a loaded division. It kind of makes sense to me, especially if you've played in that division, play that same schedule, and you've got a better record than everybody else. I get why they have divisions, but 53% of the 30 teams reach the playoffs now, so that is completely interesting. Big year for the Braves, I take it?
Oh, I suppose. I mean, is it a big year for anybody? I think nobody really knows what to expect. About, you know, how is strategy going to change over this? Will you use bullpens more? Will you use it less? Obviously, now everyone's got a designated hitter, so you're you know, franchises like the Braves that have spent the last 100 and however many years operating under the assumption pitchers would need to hit and planning accordingly now have a different layer of strategy to consider. And then, as you point out, you know, there's also something to be said too for you only have to be one of the 16 best to get into the playoffs. So if you feel like it behooves you for whatever reason to start slow or go in cycles or whatever, and you think you can manage that, then there's not quite as great a penalty for maybe a little bit of a downturn in results somewhere in the middle of the season. But you know, I mean, just who knows how this is going to work out? Who knows what this is going to look like? It's hard to kind of fathom. I think the other thing worth pointing out about baseball is it's the first of the major American sports that is trying to come back and play a season. The MLS just did basically a little bit of a sort of tournament. I think the NWSL may have done something similar as well. Basketball is trying to finish its season. Hockey is trying to finish its season. Baseball is trying to play a season. And that's something that we have not seen a ton of major sports leagues around the world do yet. And I know it's abbreviated, and I know a lot of people are going to see it and not feel like it's the same thing, and I get that. But it's going to be interesting, the challenges that are distinct to what baseball is trying to do compared to everybody else.
Yep, good point. No time for a slow start, and no point maybe to have the dog days of summer suck the wind out of your sails either. So it'll be anything but interesting, or it's going to be completely interesting, and it's great that it'll be on TV to watch, and we'll watch it tonight. We'll get caught up with you next Thursday, my man. Thanks so much for your insight. We appreciate it. Congratulations on your league championship. Last time I have to say that. And we'll do it again next week.
Thanks for having me, as always, Glass.
Zach Osterman from the Indy Stars Skyping in here on a Thursday night.